Thank you for joining us for this week's message at Crosswind Church. If you have any questions about this message or about Crosswind Church, please visit us at www.crosswindchurch.net or you can email us at info@crosswindchurch.net.
Well, good morning. My name is Jeremy, and if you're a guest with us, we are so thankful that you've joined here with us. We're in part three of a series called The Hunt. Essentially where we are going on the hunt for those lies that are placed in our heart by our enemy and shining the light of truth on them. Last week we dealt with the first family of lies that I think are the biggest, and that was the fact that God is not enough, or lies that Satan tells us about God. Today we get to get even more personal and talk about those lies that he tells us about ourselves. From a very early age, I had an opportunity to be put kind of in the spotlight, put in front of people. I was never embarrassed or never shied away from being able to tell my story or tell any story or whatever. And so even as a really young kid, that meant that I got to be on some platforms and talk to some people. I began in particular singing at a very young age. I sang, we had a church that had a choir. And so in middle school, I began singing in the choir, began singing solos in church, that sort of thing. When I got into high school, I started to be in front of people, and they handed me microphones, and I got to talk and that kind of stuff. And all the way through college, I got kind of put in positions of leadership. And as a result, when you're put kind of in front of folks like that, and it's something that you're kind of comfortable with, which I was, people can get this kind of mistaken impression about you. And as a result, on the outside, kind of from the outside, it looked like I had everything kind of together. It looked like I really had everything that I ever wanted, that I got whatever I wanted, and I was good at whatever I did, and I just had a cakewalk, had it all kind of made. And even now, like when I think about my life has so many amazing things going for it. I got a great job. I get to hang out with God as my vocation. Like, that's my job. Like, how cool is that? And get to come and do this every week. That's really cool. I have a great family. I have a beautiful wife and amazing kids and a good job. And it'd be really easy, for people on the looking at the outside to go, man, he's kind of got it all together. The thing is that's not entirely true. In fact, you guys have heard story after story after story from me talking about how I, in fact, don't have it all together and how I don't really have it going on like I like it, although I like to say that all the time. Inside, I've got some things in me that are broken, just like you have some things inside of you that were broken. I can remember when this really kind of came to a head in my life was Thanksgiving of my senior year of college. Jody and I had fallen madly in love with each other, but we weren't dating yet, and there was a reason why we weren't dating. We were in love with each other, and we were hanging out all the time. We were best friends, and we knew we were in love with each other, but we wouldn't cross that line in the relationship. When I say we, I mean I wouldn't cross that line into a relationship. And I flung home for Thanksgiving and really got to spend some time thinking and talking to my friends and talking to my parents. And I came back and I asked her to pick me up at the airport. And she picked me up at the airport. We were driving down Highway 31 in Birmingham going back to the university. And I said to her, listen, I love you and you love me. Actually, I had to tell her that I loved her at that point, like for real. Like, we were best friends. We loved being with each other. And I said, listen, I know that we are poised to enter into a relationship with one another, and I would love that. I think that probably when we get married, or when we get into a relationship, we will get married. Like, that was where it was going to head. Like, we were just so in love with each other. But I said to her, I need you to understand something. I need you to run, not walk away from me. You don't want any part of me. You don't understand that, yeah, sure, I come across this way in public, and yeah, sure, I can handle myself in front of large groups of people, whatever it is, but like, you don't understand. Inside of me is an insecure little boy, and I can be jealous, and I can suffer from anger issues, and I say things that are awkward and stupid, and like you just don't listen. If we get together and we get married, I was convinced of this. I was convinced that eventually she would see the real me. And number one, she wouldn't want to have anything to do with me. And number two, when the real me came out, she would get hurt. And I loved her too much for that to happen. And so I told her, you don't want me. Because although it may have looked like everything was going the way it was supposed to, deep down inside, I knew that I wasn't right. I knew that my heart was beyond repair. I knew that there were some things inside of me that just weren't going the way they were supposed to. To go. And the thing is, in my line of work, I get to talk to a lot of you all, and I've heard a lot of your stories, and a lot of your stories are incredibly similar. On the outside, it looks like you've got everything going the way that you would want it to go. Maybe you've got a family that's there, you have beautiful children, or you know, you've got a beautiful spouse, or maybe you own a home, or maybe you live in a home the bank owns and they let you live there, whatever it is. Like you own your own home, and you've got cars that operate and work, and you've got a job, a good job, a job that has a future in it, right? Whatever it may be, you're in school, you got accepted to college, you've been accepted to grad school, you've got things going like you like it, and on the outside, it would look like you have everything together, but on the inside, you wrestle with some things. And on the inside, you're terrified that if people really found out who you were, if people really found out what you did when the door was shut, if people really found out the way that you thought, they wouldn't want to have anything to do with you. And Satan bends over, and he whispers in your ear, and he whispers in my ear, things like, you don't have what it takes. You can't do it. No one believes in you. You're not worth the pursuit. You're so messed up. There's no way God could ever love you. And it plants these little spiders inside of our heart that spin all of these webs of destructive behaviors. You want to know what makes the webs what makes these spiders so potent, so particularly potent in our lives, these lies? Is that there is a truth that they're rooted in. I think that's what makes all of these lies so dangerous. Is that down at the core, it's a truth that's been manipulated and twisted. See, here's the unpopular truth. You are a sinner. Here's the unpopular truth. We all make mistakes and do things that we shouldn't do, things that we are disappointed in ourselves in. You are a sinner. You are wired to sin. That is inside of you. That is something that is broken from the fall of mankind. You are sinful. And you live in a sinful world. A world that has disease, and a world that has dying, and a world that has pain and suffering, and a world that experiences divorce and loss and all of those things. And so because we are sinful and we live in a sinful world, these lies can take truth that we're actually worthless. That we're actually not worth anyone's love, especially God's love. So as a result, some of these lies have taken root in your hearts. And you all have spun into spirals of despair and depression and anxiety. And you've medicated with things like alcohol and shopping and eating and sleeping. And you have continued to kind of go down this spiral until you no longer are the man or the woman that God made you to be. And you're unable to step into the plan that God has laid out for your life. And so just like every other life, today, we're going to battle this lie with the truth. But the thing that may come as a shock is that we can't battle this lie with the truth that you're not a sinner. Because you are. We can't battle this truth with the lie that things will always be perfect, because they won't. So to battle this lie, we're going to have to shine the light of truth on it in such a way that we see how God views us and looks at us. In spite of those things. And what God was compelled to do for us because of those things. Today we find this truth in a song. It was a song that a guy named David wrote. And let me tell you why that's a big deal. David was a king in Israel, and he was terribly flawed, right? In fact, you can go read the story of David. God called him a man after his own heart. But there was one time where David actually had an affair with the wife of one of his military commanders, and then had that military commander killed to cover it all up when she got pregnant. It was such a big ordeal. His family was ripped apart. He had a son that rebelled against him. The first civil war in all of Israel was caused because David's son rebelled against him. There were all kinds of crazy things going on, all kinds of terrible flaws that kind of pointed out in David's life. And in the middle of all that, in the midst of all that, and in spite of all that, David catches on to something, catches a glimpse of something, and gives us a glimpse into this truth about how God views us. And we're going to be reading from Psalm 139 today, and we're going to read all of it. Don't worry, I know it's like 24 verses. We'll go quickly through it. But in this, we're going to see the battle that plays out in David's life, and it's very much like the battle that plays out in our lives as well. And we're going to shine some truth on the lies, the truth, excuse me, on the lies that are placed in our heart by our enemies. Psalm 139, we're going to begin in verse 1. David says this: "You have searched me, O Lord, and you know me. You know me when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my laying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand on me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain." I grew up in the 1980s for the most part. I was a kid in the 80s. I went to high school in the 90s. In the 1980s, there was a disease that was wreaking havoc on our nation, in fact, all over the world. And it struck terror in the hearts of a lot of us because not much was known about it. It was the disease AIDS, caused by the human immunodeficiency virus, HIV virus, and it was everywhere. At the time in the 80s, they were still trying to figure out what exactly it looked like and how we could battle it and how it was transmitted. There was a lot of question about how it was transmitted. There was confusion. There was misinformation. There was all kinds of stuff going on. And it really, if you were alive in the 80s and you remember any of that, there was a little bit of a fear that kind of went on around this particular illness. Well, in the late 80s, I had an opportunity because of my own disease, my own blood immunodeficiency virus. It wasn't a virus, my own immunodeficiency. I had an opportunity to go to the National Institutes of Health, where I became a guinea pig for them. They tested all kinds of drugs on me, which does not explain why I am the way I am. We'll get to that in a minute. They tested a lot of stuff on me, and I knew I was about the sixth grade, and I can remember being told that they are treating and studying HIV patients on the same floor in the same clinic that I would be going to. And let me tell you, there's a little bit of fear in me. There's a little bit of terror in me. As an 11-year-old, 10-year-old, I still had no idea what that looked like. I didn't know any of the information about it. I was scared to death. And I would find myself sitting in the waiting room, like not wanting to touch anything. And I would see people across the room, and I would wonder, are they infected with this virus? Are they infected with this disease that could take my life? I would find myself going into rooms and just keeping my hands to myself. I didn't want to touch anybody. I didn't want to brush up anybody. I wanted to avoid people. Now, let me tell you why that was so weird. Because I had my own immunodeficiency. I had my own kind of blood disorder where I couldn't fight off bacteria and fungus. And the thing that I was doing that I know now that I didn't know then is I was kind of projecting on other folks. Like, I felt that if people found out about my disease, even though they couldn't catch it from me, even though I couldn't give it to them, if they found out about it, they would shun me. They would treat me the same way that I was treating these patients on this clinic floor, so ignorantly on my part. That if they really knew what was going on, if my friends really knew what was going on inside of my heart, they wouldn't let me spend the night at the house anymore. They wouldn't want to play baseball with me. They wouldn't want to be my friend. They'd be afraid to shake my hand or to hug me, right? I didn't want people to know because I was afraid that if they really found out who I was, they wouldn't want to have anything to do with me. Now, let me tell you what is so terrifying about the first six verses of this psalm. David says, "God, you know me better than anyone. You know me inside, you know me out. My thoughts, God, you know them. The words that I say, you know them before one of them crosses my lips. God, you go before me, you go behind me, you hit me on every side. You're everywhere. You know me inside and out. In fact, you know me, God, better than I know myself, better than anyone else knows me." And the fear that comes in my heart, and maybe yours when you hear that, is if God really knows you, then certainly he doesn't want to have anything to do with you. If God really knows me, if he really knew what I think about, if he really knew where my mind kind of went, he wouldn't want to hang out with me. He wouldn't love me. He wouldn't want to be my friend. And David goes, listen, God knows you better than you know yourself. And this knowledge is not anything that you can get. It's too wonderful. It's too big for us to even comprehend. There are things about you that God knows that you will never even know. That doesn't mean that God's going to shun you or push you away. Look what David says next, verse 7. He says this: "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go to the heavens, you're there. If I go down to my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me, and light become night around me, even the darkness will not be a dark to you. The night will shine like day, for darkness is as light to you. He says, even though you know me better than anybody else, you know all the warts and bumps and cuts and bruises inside of me, inside of my heart. God, you never leave me. Your hand is always on me. Growing up, I've always had this type of personality that was able to fill up the room that I'm in, right? In fact, through college, this was a big deal. Like, I would walk into a room and just be like, hello, I'm here, right? And be like, everybody look at me and pay attention to me. And I would be able just to kind of command people's attention. It was so bad in college, like, it got out of control. It was so bad in college, Jody didn't want to have anything to do with me when she first met me. She was a freshman in college, I was a sophomore. We met at the BSU, the BCM, at Sanford University. And she said, Jerry, my first impression of you is you were cocky and arrogant, and I didn't want to have anything to do with you. She was not entirely wrong, right? But here's the thing. As I got a little bit older, I began to think that my personality was a bad thing. I began to buy the fact that if I really allowed myself to be myself, that people wouldn't want to hang out with me. Because myself is somebody that might say something without thinking. Myself is somebody that might say something like that's maybe just a little bit off, and I was trying to be funny, but it really wasn't funny, and it wasn't bad, it was just awkward, right? And so I have this tendency sometimes when I'm really fully being me to be just a little bit socially off-putting, right? To where like people just are like, okay, and they go to the other side of the room, like, and that's just kind of what I begin to think is that if I really am me, if I really am my personality, people will avoid me, shun me, move to the other side of the room, not want to have anything to do with me. Listen, I bought into that for a large portion of my adult life, and so as a result, I would do everything that I could when I walked in the room to make myself as small as I could, to not speak. It was hard. So I was going against how God made me. We'll talk about that in just a minute. It was a struggle. And in the process, I kind of lost myself. And the thing that I was afraid of, that if I was really me, that people would avoid me and not want to be with me and talk bad about me and all that sort of stuff, that same concept many of us have inside of our hearts, that same lie we have bought into, right? And you may put on a big front. You may go, I don't even care what people think about me. Hogwash. You care about what somebody thinks, right? Come on, so big. God knows you better than anyone else. And David says, he never leaves you. If you try to get away from him, he's there. He goes before you. He comes behind you. He has his hand on you. And here's the reason why he doesn't leave you, because of who you are. Here's the reason why. This is so big. Psalm 139, verse 13 and following. Some of you guys should memorize this. I know I do. Verse 13. For you, God, created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works, God, are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body, and all of my days were ordained for me. All the ordained days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came. Do you know why God doesn't leave you because of who you are? Do you know why God isn't ashamed of your personality and your body? Why he's not willing to abandon you? It's because he made you. He knitted you together in your mother's womb. Before she laid eyes on you, he saw you. And David says, listen, God, I am fearful, wonderful, made. All of your works, God, are perfect. And I am one. Your work. Because of my struggle with my personality, I've taken all kinds of personality profiles. So I have the DISC profile, I'm a high D. If you don't know what that, if you know what that is, right? I'm a type A, I'm an Enneagram 1. You can go look all those up. They're painfully flawed people. The thing was, is I would read all of those personality profiles. And they would tag me, right? I have this strong desire, this strong idea of what's right and wrong, as I define right and wrong. And it frustrates me no end when people don't do right as I perceive right. I like rules. I like people to follow rules. That's why I like you to park in the lines in the parking lot. It's why we put lines in the parking lot. Listen, I like to be in charge. I like to control things. Can I tell you something? For the longest time, I would read those. And I would go, I would say this to myself. I've never said it loud, but I would say, I hate how I'm wired. I wish that I weren't this way. I wish that I had some other mix of personality traits where people just love me, love to be around me, but instead I can come across abrasive. I can say things that I don't want to say. I can hurt people's feelings. I don't want to do that. But that was kind of how I'm wired. And so like I would wrestle with that and I would go, I don't like it. God, I wish you had done something different. But look what David says in Psalm 139. He says, you formed my innermost being. Oh, you know what that means? God wired me. God gave me my personality traits. God wired you. God put you together with your unique blend of personality and talent and giftedness and this unique skill set. He put it all in your body and he said, that is good. In fact, he made you so unique. There's not one person, I would argue, in all of history that has your quite unique makeup. And God made you that way, and you don't have to be ashamed of whether you're an Enneagram 1 or an Enneagram 7, or you're a D on the disc scale, or you're a C on the disc scale. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you type A, you type B, you type F. It doesn't matter. Like, here's the thing. God said, this is how I need this person to act. This is how I need their personality to be. Here's the giftedness. Here's the skill set. Here's the talent. And I'm going to build them, knit them, put them together. And behold, it is very good. All your works, he says, are wonderful. All of your works are wonderful. Not just some of them. Now, here's the thing where we can't drive off the cliff. That doesn't allow Jeremy to be a jerk. That doesn't allow me to enter into sin. My personality traits, right, as good as they are, if they remain unchecked, I will become a nuisance to society and I will not advance the kingdom of God. And I will enter into a sinful behavior that makes me less like Christ rather than more like Him. You with me? Here's the thing. God wired you uniquely the way that you are, but that does not allow or excuse your sin, and it does not allow you to be a jerk, in my case. You with me? You with me? But He made you, and you're wonderful, and He is proud of you. We'll move on. David, as if he's so blown away by that, he moves into maybe what I would call, if this were a song, maybe this is the bridge. Right here we go. Verse 17 says this: how precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. And when I awake, I am still with you. David goes, listen, let me pray. I love my girls. Y'all, listen, we're just going to brag on Emma and Addison. They're amazing girls. Like, they really are. Emma, that starting pitcher for the softball team this last year, did so well. So proud of her, right? She only been pitching for a year. Like, thank goodness she has Jody's athletic ability because she was able to kind of do some of that. They're both so smart. Abigail is starring as Charlotte in Charlotte's Web today, this afternoon. Like, she just does an amazing job. You put her with lights on a stage and a microphone, and she is amazing. Like, I get to sit and watch her. I'm so proud of how smart they are. I'm so proud of how beautiful they are. I'm so thankful they take after the mother. And here's the thing. When I think about my girls, I have such precious thoughts about them. Does that mean that I think they're perfect? I don't think they're perfect. I think there's ways that they can improve and grow in their relationship with Jesus and the grace of God. Absolutely. That's it. But I'm telling you, that's the pale in comparison to the precious, wonderful thoughts that I have about my girls. And I have so many of them. We could talk all day about the things that I like about them and love about them. David goes, you want to know, God, about your thoughts about me? They are precious. And there are many. Now wrap your head around that. That's so rich. That's so good. In the same way that you feel about your spouse, in the same way you feel about your children, in the same way you feel about your niece or your nephew or that girlfriend that you love that you're going to marry, whatever it may be, I'm telling you, in the same way that you feel about them, the same way you think about them, God goes, oh, my thoughts are much more precious about you. My thoughts are much more numerous than that. Oh, I think the world of you. Maybe some of you need to hear that. Because you don't think that God thinks good things about you. He has precious thoughts about you. He thinks so much of you. I would never, ever in a million years sum up my girls in a one-sentence phrase. But we do that to ourselves all the time, don't we? Well, I'm so stupid. Well, I'm just dumb. Well, I'm just a loser. I'm just a cheater. I'm a has-been and never was. I'm just a guy that's fooled everybody in the world. And we minimize who we are to one negative sentence, a lie that was planted inside of our hearts by the enemy and the father of lies. But God, He doesn't diminish who you are down to just one sentence. He doesn't take who you are and will it down to just one pejorative phrase. You want to know what God thinks about you? God says that you're His masterpiece. You're His handiwork. Ephesians chapter 2. God says that you are valuable, more valuable than anything else in all of creation. Matthew chapter 10. He says that you're new. 2 Corinthians chapter 5. You are His representative. Genesis chapter 1. You are His child. John chapter 1. You are free from sin and death, Romans 8, 2. And who the Father sets free, He is free indeed, Galatians 5, 1. You are a fellow heir with Christ, Romans 8, 17. You are accepted, Romans 15. You are no longer a slave, Galatians 4, 7. You are redeemed and forgiven, Ephesians 1. You are alive with Christ, Ephesians 2. You are chosen, 1 Thessalonians chapter 1. You are a royal priesthood. You are God's chosen people. You are His special possession. The enemy would tell you that you are not worth it, that you don't have what it takes, that you're not valuable, that you are low down, dirty, rotten, fooled everybody, not going to accomplish anything or amount to anything, an embarrassment to God, an embarrassment to your family, an embarrassment to this earth. And God goes, no. He's my special possession. She's my special possession. And I knit them together. And I put them together with this unique blend of humanity. And I'm proud of them. I'm proud of them. But Jerry, we got so far to go. Sure we do. Sure we do. But the battle is not ours alone. The battle is with a God that goes, listen, I know that you are far from perfect, and I know that you're sinful, and I know that you have all these struggles and all these thoughts. I know them before you even know them. In fact, I know stuff about you, God might say, that you don't know. And I still choose to love you and act on your behalf. You, my special possession. We'll move fast through the rest of this. Verse 19. David, it's as if he's recognizing the battle we're at. He goes, if only you, God, would slay the wicked. Away from me, you who are bloodthirsty. They speak of you with evil intent. Your adversaries misuse your name. Do I not hate those who hate you, Lord, and abhor those who are in rebellion against you? I have nothing but hatred for them. I count them as my enemies. It's as if David goes, listen, God, we have an enemy that is going to lie to us. He's going to take your truth and distort it and twist it, and he's going to plant little spiders in our life that are going to spin all kinds of cobwebs that are going to bind us down and hold us in slavery for the rest of our lives, keep us from walking into your plan for us, keep us from becoming the men and women that you want us to be. God, they are our enemies, and I wish they would be silent, and I wish you would shut them up, and I wish you would destroy them. But we're not just at a battle, David might say, with another king and another army where we could go out with swords and fight chariots. We're in a spiritual battle, and he's going to keep lying to us, God. I wish you would just get rid of them. But in the meantime, verse 23, he says, search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me. Lead me into the way everlasting. I love that they use the phrase, you know God might answer his heart. God knows that the lies are there, and he knows that they whisper to our hearts. And he knows that we worry, right? He knows that we worry that if I'm really who I am, no one will love me. If I really am who God made me to be, then everyone will shun me and they'll push me away. David goes, God, I know that to be true. So I'm going to need you to lead me, he says, to everlasting. I need you to lead me to forever. I'm going to need you to change my perspective and allow me to focus on your truth, focus on your gospel, focus on who you say I am, not right now, but forever. Shine light on the lies that are planted in my heart by our enemy. Do you know how much you are loved by God? Do you know how much he cares about you? He who did not withhold his son, his only son, so that he could have a relationship with you, so that he could restore what we broke through our sinfulness. Do you not know that even though we may have far to go, that God still cares so much about you, that he's still willing to act on your behalf, that he calls you his child, that he calls you his beloved, that he calls you his special possession? Do you not know how much you're loved? Because our enemy would like us to not know. Our enemy would rather us believe the lies that we've been believing. That we're not worth it, that we don't have what it takes, that we're not enough, that we're not lovable, that God is somehow ashamed by us. But God has knit you together. He has wired you perfectly. In fact, he has put you at this particular point in history with your unique makeup and your unique wiring so that you can accomplish his will for right now in history. How cool is that? If we can continue to buy into the truth and step into the light, God can use you to advance his kingdom in your little corner of the world. God can use a group of people like this church to advance his kingdom all over the world. If we're willing to go, I know what the enemy says I am, but I know who God says I am. And I'm going to believe the truth over the lie. So today, if you're here and you're a follower of Jesus, I just want to ask you this question. What is the lie about yourself that you've been believing? We've intentionally not defined it very specifically because I think this lie about ourselves is something that's a little unique based on who you are. It may be something like, I don't have what it takes. I'm not worth the pursuit. I am unlovable. If people really knew me, they wouldn't like me or want to be around me. If people knew what I thought, if people knew what I did, if people knew what I had done, if people knew how broken I was, right? Then God couldn't love me. They wouldn't love me. Everyone would abandon me and all hope would be lost. What is the lie? This is the question. What is the lie that you've been believing? Where is the spider in your heart? And before the cobwebs can get moved away, and before all the behavior can change, we've got to be willing to put stake through the heart of the lie that's been put there by our enemy. Shine the light of truth on. What is the lie you have been holding on to? What truth you speak into that lie to put it to death? And today, if you're here and you're not a follower of Jesus Christ, if you're here and you're not someone that has given your life to him and put your trust in him, then maybe the way that you begin to put death to that spider is by putting your trust in him. It's by responding to the love of God through Jesus Christ. It's by saying, God, I am helplessly broken. And I want to be called your child. And I want to be called your friend. And I want to be called new. And I don't want to be a slave anymore. But to have all of those things, I have to find freedom that comes through Jesus Christ. Freedom being set free indeed in him. If you want to follow Jesus Christ, I'm going to give you two ways that you can respond. First way is the easiest way. And that is you download our church app. You click on the Connect tab. And you fill out that Connect card and you check, I want to have a relationship with Jesus. Or I want to know how to have a relationship with Jesus. And we'll contact him. We'll talk about it. We'll set up a meeting. We'll make it happen. If I could be honest with you, I don't want to wait until next week. Today, if you're here and you want to step into the light of Jesus Christ, In just a minute, I'm going to make it as non-confrontational as I can. I'm going to pray, and we're going to dismiss our service. And when we do, people are going to go everywhere. We're going to have people go get their kids. We're going to have people go out to the bathroom, grab another cup of coffee, get a donut, whatever it may be. We're going to be people everywhere. But back here to my left, your right, there's a room that has a little sign over it that says starting point. There some of our elders will be. There I will be. There some of our elders' wives will be. If you want to know about that, let's not wait until this week. As everyone's moving, you can kind of just make your way back to that room. I would love to talk with you. Someone would love to talk with you about how you can step into the light, the truth, which is Jesus Christ. Now, what is the lie you're believing? And how can you begin to put it together today? Let's pray. God, you are so remarkable. You love us and have called us and have created us and knit us together in our mother's wombs with a unique blend of talents and abilities and hardwiring that you intended for this particular purpose, for this time. And God, you're not ashamed of it. And although if we aren't careful, we will find ourselves wandering into sin, God, even in spite of all that, I'm so thankful that you love us in spite of all that. And so God, I pray that you would help every single person here who deals with these battles. God, we all do. We deal with these lies that we're not enough. Lies that our enemy tells us about ourselves. I pray that we would begin to shine light on those lies. Begin to realize just exactly what it is you think about us. So help us not to wander into sin. Help us not to wander into behavior that is not becoming of the gospel that has saved us. But may we never be ashamed of our personalities. We never be ashamed of the God that has saved us. So God, for those that are here today that have not put their trust in you, I pray that you would extend your grace to them. I pray that you would tug at their heart even right now and draw them to our starting point room, that you might receive the glory as we step into your truth to accomplish your will for our lives and your kingdom throughout this world. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Thank you guys so much. I'll see you next week as we conclude the series.